All right, Jack Wilson and Roy Ayers with a little number called Ramblin'. This was part of their quartet that they had formed and were performing together back in the 1960s. Wow, time flies. The Jack Wilson Quartet featuring Roy Ayers and Monk Montgomery as well on bass, and Varner Barlow on drums. This was going back to the days of 1966, and it was a title track of the album they produced that year. All right, so how are things going with you? How are things going with you? First, let me bring you up to date with the great storm that has been bouncing back and forth here in South and Central Florida. Well, it's now bounced back again to the northern part of Florida, and hopefully it will soon behave itself and not cause any kind of flooding and damage. But for the moment, the winds are still a little high. They're describing them as hurricane force winds still existing. But things have quieted down just the same. So people are a little bit comforted by the fact, although they're saying there still will be this question of surges and flooding. But it's now back to the north and tracing its way across the northern part of the state. Hopefully it will just behave itself and go out to sea and never come back again. That's what we're all hoping, but you never know. This storm has already attacked us twice here and left in its wake for people who are in low-lying areas. As I mentioned before, where I live, the building is built on a mound. So that doesn't mean it would never flood, but it would take a lot of water to creep up to the height of the mound to begin to do any damage. All right, so let's talk a little bit about something different, and yet the same. We're talking about disasters, things creating disaster in people's lives. More than 10 million people in the United States have been diagnosed or are suffering with COVID-19, the coronavirus. 241,000 have already died from the disease, and health authorities are projecting that 100,000 more COVID victims will die in the course of the next 2 months. Put that in your mind. 100,000 more will die over the next 2 months. By any measure, the COVID-19 pandemic has had and continues to have catastrophic effect in the United States. Not that one can tell from the priorities and urgent concerns of President Donald Trump. COVID-19 is not nearly as high on his list of priorities as himself. Most health experts will agree that this president has gone AWOL, absent without leave, on the issue of the virus. Well, of course, he's making the case. He's using his time well. He's making the case that he lost a second shot at the presidency, and he has a lot to make up for because he still is interested in that. So his attention is there. Not all these hundreds of thousands of people who have died are dying and will die, and those numbers apply just to the United States, which in effect has taken the lead across the globe in terms of deaths and suffering from the coronavirus. He is more concerned about preserving himself, even if he has to make up all kinds of lies, make all kinds of useless assertions of voter fraud. He's saying that all these people are against him, but particularly Joe Biden. Joe Biden is standing in the way of his glory. So uninvolved in leading a response to the COVID-19 crisis, both at home and abroad, the United States and world health community have come to regard him, that is Trump, as, quote, a humanitarian disaster. Not the thing, but him. President Donald J. Trump has come to embody, has come even to be a humanitarian disaster. So that is our subject for today. This humanitarian disaster with which we are living. And it seems as if there's a great deal of resistance to doing anything about it, especially in his own party. His own party isn't really taking the president to task. The people who are in the thick of the fight are out there by themselves for the most part. They are underfunded, they're overworked, and still the deaths increase, the infections increase. There's no budget. Because in the last days, one supposes, of Trump's tenure in office, his focus is putting as much of the government's money as possible at his personal disposal. You can't try these cases all over the place and pay lawyers and do that out of your own pocket. So the money is allocated from elsewhere, even if it means turning your head around from dealing with truly pressing problems and focusing on yourself and your specific interests. And in the meantime, we do not see people in the streets. We do not see a constant barrage against Trump saying, what the hell are you thinking? You're supposed to be president of these United States. Look at the figures that I just quoted you. 241,000 people have already died. By any measure, that is a major, major, major crisis. 100,000 are predicted to die within the next 2 months. And we have more cases developing every single day. And you are nowhere on site. You are nowhere involved. You are taking care of Donald Trump and his absolute need to stay in office. And in the last remaining weeks until your tenure is up, if indeed you might have another 4 years if your minions produce for you, you're using the taxpayers' money to finance all these lawsuits that still are pending, all these studies that and research that must be done. That's where the money is going. And we do not have not even 20 people who will stand up, call a news conference, and say we find this president both inhumane and his administration absolutely anti-humanitarian. We condemn this. We are not part of this. We're separating ourselves from this because this is just too gruesome to lay claim to as an elected representative in the United States Congress. We haven't seen that much courage yet. You know what it takes for the entire world community to say, this is anti-humanitarian. This man is a disaster himself. So we're going to talk about that. What will it take? Why is it that we do not see a coordinated effort? This is not about your politics, whether you're Democrat, Republican, progressive, or whatever. This is a major world class crisis. And in the meantime, he's busy trying to make a case against Biden, trying to block Biden from entering his office, not passing on classified information that Biden would need to get off to a good, solid start. He's an awful human being. But nobody wants to say that. Everybody is in Congress, they seem to be twiddling their thumbs and wringing their hands. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. They don't want to offend Donald, this beast. And so the people continue to die. The numbers continue to go up of infections. And the need for more resources to be allocated so that the frontline people who are responding have at least what they need to respond effectively. This is where this is really the fight. This is where the rubber meets the road. But even now, with the situation as grotesquely anti-humanitarian as it is, people are still giving themselves the leeway and opportunity to excuse their uninvolvement. Because Trump is their guy. And we want him to succeed. We are with him. This is everybody's addled brain who thinks this way. You know what it is for 10 million people to have been diagnosed and who will continue to suffer with this disease? That's just the ones who have been diagnosed. 10 million. And this country is running like, hey, nothing is happening. Everything is under control. Trump is our president. No need to worry. ,241,000 people have died. And he is no big deal to him. He was not concerned about them in the first place. Only he might have wanted to know they voted for him before they died. And the projection of 100,000 more deaths in the next 2 months. 50,000 people will die every month for the next 2 months. And that's as far as they are willing to count. They just said, we don't dare go beyond that because it's going to get exponentially worse. But we could assure you that our models are saying 100,000 more people will die in 2 months. What has gone wrong in this country? That we have no sense of priorities. We don't know what we ought to be doing. We don't have any sympathy. We don't have any concern for anybody else. We don't understand the implications of this. What do you think? That it wouldn't get around to us? You think we are totally immune? What the hell could people be thinking? And they're terrified. They are terrified of facing down this man. We know you were raised this way, to not think of anybody but yourself. We know that for your whole life, it's all about you and nobody else. You first, you last, you always. But I just read you some statistics that are staggering. And it's not just applicable to those living in the United States. Look how we look to the world community of nations, that these kinds of statistics are now associated with a leading power of the world. Doesn't look like you're a leading power. It doesn't look like you're concerned about your people. It doesn't look like you have any instinct at all for fairness and equality and justice. That people who are suffering and who are destined to suffer, they already have the numbers based on models that they have constructed. They already have the numbers. They project 100,000 people, 50,000 people a month will die for the next 2 months. And there's no answer. There's no concern. There's no response from this administration and the White House. The only thing you are concerned about is that you should get your shot that you want at the next 4 years in the White House. That's all you want. You couldn't care less who died, who get infected. You don't care. Because, and I will say it so that people can't say I didn't say it, Donald Trump has an understanding of who is doing the bulk of the dying in this country because of coronavirus. It's largely a group of African Americans and Latinos dying in disproportionate numbers, getting the disease in disproportionate numbers. This is sickening. It should trouble us that we live in a country with this miserable kind of leadership. No leadership, actually. And that it does not, even to now, it does not constitute a crisis. It does not require emergency response. It does not require meetings. It does not require intervention at a whole different level. It certainly doesn't require money. Let them die. And all of the activists, all of the people who are involved in making substantive changes in the lives of Americans, they don't see this as a crisis. They don't see that we need to stop everything dead in its tracks right now and call attention, since no one is calling attention to it, or hardly anyone is calling attention to it, to say we will not ignore it. We will not ignore the people who are suffering and dying because of this disease. We insist that the whatever is necessary to take care, to help, that is a priority. Not manufacturing bogus charges of voter fraud, but your citizens are dying. Americans are dying. And you have no answers. You have no comments. You have nothing to say. What a horrible human being. And all the people who should be talking really loudly right about now have shut up. They've lost their voices. They're afraid of Donald Trump. What is he going to do to me? He's going to fire me. So I better just keep my mouth shut. I'm sorry they're dying and everything, but my job is on the line, and or will be. That's more important to me. People should be out in the street by the millions, not just in opposition to Trump and in opposition to a casual attitude about this disease, but to show the world we have not lost our humanity. We will not be silent in the midst of what is, I consider, a major crime. To pretend it's not happening, it doesn't exist. We need not get excited. That's what it comes down to, and we are made partners and party to it through our silence and inaction. This man is raising holy hell because he did not get reelected. No holy hell over coronavirus. Let's take a break now. Come back to your thoughts and your ideas right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm talking about this lack of humanity that epitomizes the attitude of this administration, the administration of Donald J. Trump, where we have hundreds of people infected and dying and already dead. And he's not the least bit excited about that. He's not the least bit concerned about working on an immediate, comprehensive response. Instead, he delights in being completely uninvolved. He's a scourge of society, not just in the United States, but all around the world. People are seeing that this is not the way they know the United States to behave. They know the United States is very much involved in humanitarian efforts. But now at this particular juncture, when there is so much suffering and death and hurt, the leader of this nation has nothing to offer. Nothing. No plans, no meetings, no concerns, nothing. Because he's working on his own individual projects. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I actually was hoping to hear today that you were spared that second blow from Ita. I was watching it on the news, so I'm happy to hear that you fared well.
Thank you. We escaped it.
Yes, yes, yes. I wanted to take a few minutes just to share an experience that I had last week. I left last week Sunday, 2 days before the election, because I just didn't want to be in the United States when the results came through, or I just didn't want to be in the environment. So I left and went to Puerto Rico on Sunday, and I spent the entire week in Puerto Rico. But I wanted to share what my COVID experience was like in Puerto Rico. In order to enter Puerto Rico, you had to have a negative COVID test within 72 hours of your arrival in Puerto Rico. The minute you collected your baggage from baggage claim, you could not exit the airport before you were examined. And not, I don't mean examined physically, but you had to be interviewed. You had to show your negative COVID test. They took down all of your contact information, where you were going to be on the island. And every day that I was on the island, I received a text on my phone asking me if I had any of the COVID-19 symptoms. Every day I was on the island, I received a text that I had to respond yes or no to whether I had any symptoms. Upon entering every building in Puerto Rico, I don't care whether it's a hotel, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a museum, whether it's a supermarket, everywhere on the island, upon entrance, your temperature is taken and you are given hand sanitizers. And it is universal across the island. Every time I went out of the hotel, I thought, well, they know who I am now. I don't care if I went out, if I exited the hotel 10 times a day. Upon return, 10 times my temperature was taken. The point is, when you are concerned about your population, when you're concerned about the people, that's what you do. That little island has a universal operation on how they handle and address COVID-19. If by chance I had entered and had a temperature, even though I had a negative test upon arrival, if I had had a temperature, I would have been put in quarantine and sent back to the U.S. When I arrived back in at JFK on Saturday, all they did was have me fill out a contact information sheet. Nobody took my test. Nobody interviewed me. Nobody did anything. The information I put on that paper could have been false for all they knew. And that was the extent of the monitoring upon arrival back in the United States. A completely different experience.
What do you think about the president's response so far, or lack thereof?
I think my point is the disparate policies on how you respond to people for whom you have responsibility. In other words, he is responsible for the health and welfare of all of us, and yet still he has ignored us as if, well, he has communicated that we don't count. But the irony is, even within his own family, I don't know if you remember how he talked about his son Barron when Barron turned up positive. He didn't sound like a concerned parent. You know, when your child gets sick, you hover over them, you express concern. Oh my God, I was worried, I was scared. None of that. He was glib. Oh, Barron is young, he's strong, he's healthy, he got over it. This is not a man. If he cannot express concern for his own flesh and blood, how can we expect him to extend that to us? Again, this is part and parcel of his personality, of his illness. And, you know, more than that, we can't say. It's he doesn't have the capacity.
No. He doesn't have it. And he doesn't care whether people know.
He doesn't care what people think about him. He could care less. He doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. That's also part of the person. That's also part of the illness. A lack of caring about what others think about you, good or bad. And usually some people can be shamed. It's an internal sense of right and wrong, good and evil, moral and immoral. He doesn't have the capacity for any of those sentiments.
But aren't the numbers themselves, just the numbers, so staggering that whatever your propensity is, it would somehow stimulate a reaction from you that would indicate that you're concerned? These numbers are just staggering.
Okay, you asked why are people not in the street. I was watching a news report, and before the election results were given, one of the reporters asked this woman, you know, who she had voted for, and she said she had voted for Trump in 16, and she was voting for him again in 20. And when they asked her about COVID, she admitted that her own father had died from COVID-19. But she was satisfied with the job that Trump had done, and so that's why she was voting for him again. Mm. So he is buoyed by that 40% of people who, for whatever reason, we believe that they are irrational, but they absolutely believe in his response and support his response, and that is what is keeping him going. Okay, so a couple of you don't like my response, but guess what? Look at these folks over here. They're very happy with my response. What's your problem?
Exactly. Thanks, Patricia, for your call and your input today. Benji from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you treat this is Benji calling. Thank you for your beautiful monologue. You should be given the Congressional Humanitarian Award.
No, not at all. There are lots of people we don't know their names, we don't see their faces, but believe me, there are people who have been working so hard that even their families are concerned with how long they would last going at the pace that they're going to help others.
I just think you're special. And I don't mean to patronize you. I compliment you every time, and I will continue to compliment you. So I stand by what I said, despite your humility. I just want to give a little analysis as to why we're not seeing a response from the from the senators, congressional senators. That's because all eyes are on Georgia. And they don't want to. Yeah, so that's why they're sticking with Trump, because Trump, he's able to turn out the voters. He got 71 million voters. I don't know how he did that. So that's why I think they're mum. I don't know why I guess that's why Congressional House members too, because they want to, it's crucial for them in order to continue, the power and to continue to be cruel. So that's my analysis. And I also have another little bit of analysis. The reason why I think we're not in the streets, because why do you think Trump fired Esper? He fired Esper because the defense secretary, because if you remember, he didn't believe it was correct to use military to put down the people. If we go out and protest now, he's feel free. You see, we're going to play into his hands politically, and George is on our mind. What do you think about that analysis?
Well, I don't think it matters if you have a conviction what the analysis is.
Well, you always tell us to look deeper.
Yourself, you have to put yourself on the line somehow.
Yeah.
You have to be involved. You cannot let this go without responding or participating in a response that would improve conditions and that would possibly help save thousands of lives.
Yes, but
we don't know what the budget is.
I'm sorry, but Biden's going to be crippled. He's not going to be able to do anything.
Biden, and if Biden can't deal with it, then he ought to get out too.
No. If the Democrats don't take the Senate, there's no hope he can get any stimulus package. I think George is critical.
You see, this is where I think we ought to get over the politics of fear. If we communicate the right message that we're not afraid, because any one of these numbers could have pertained to us and those who concern us. But we cannot take the position of retreat before we even start.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We have to make a stand. This is our government. This is our country. These are our fellow citizens. And we're fighting to help the conditions improve. And now, because this is not a disease that would sit around and wait until help comes. We are not taking this seriously as a citizenry. We have checked out as well. We're not involved.
I hear. I just try to give some analysis. I know you like analysis, but okay. All right. Okay, but I hear what you're saying. Okay, I like what you're saying. Not to give in to fear. That's very, very good.
No.
That's excellent what you said. I like that.
And if it comes to threatening people who are soon to run for re-election, go right ahead and threaten.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't respond, they're not worth having as a representative anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's terrific what you're saying, because we're not doing things because we're fearful for whatever reason. I'm fearful of losing Georgia, but that's not. But you say it's immaterial. You have to stand up for the citizenry. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
And
dealing with a humanitarian crisis and let the chips like they fall. Okay, I hear what you're saying. Okay. All right. Okay.
I mean,
what
is the magic number that we will respond to? If 10 million people infected doesn't cause you to be concerned, if 241,000 dead isn't doing anything to kind of get you concerned, if 100,000 more in the next 2 months doesn't do anything to get you concerned, I don't know what else would get you concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think you hit it on the nail. We got to overcome the fear. Okay, so we're gonna overcome the fear, and we're going to We're gonna do what you. We're gonna do what you're asking us to do. At least I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try to do whatever I can. Okay. Thank you, Yatrice.
They're not doing us any favors. In fact, if there's any fear involved, it is they who should be afraid of us because we have the numbers on our side.
Mm-hmm.
Just 435 of them in Congress. There's 330 million of us outside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are we afraid of?
Okay. Good. Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Yatrice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Benji, for calling. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Yatrice, how's it going?
Okay. How's about you?
So far, so good in relation to your topic, just trying not to catch the Rona.
I know.
Shoot. But, I was looking at I kind of take it for what, just take it for what it's worth. When you look at, say, pre-election polls, right? And, many people kind of don't trust them. But one of the more interesting ones they asked people was, what was their biggest concern about this, about what the presidents or the candidates were going to present in regards to a reason why they want, they would want to elect them. And out of all of the polls that I've seen, the economy was number one. Coronavirus was between second and fifth. So what does that tell me? People are not really concerned about this virus in regards to the polls. And I'm assuming that most of these people are people who, may want to vote for Donald Trump. And, just as Patricia, who, I always love listening to, mentioned about her experience in Puerto Rico and how the rest of the world is taking this seriously, we have a president who does not or doesn't care. I don't even think he even mentioned anything about this second wave that is here right now, after the election. So, but like I said, Trump is just playing off of what, we as an American society overall thinks that, we're the best country in the world. We have the best health care. And this coronavirus, this year has told us something else. I mean, we're looking at third world countries who are getting over the coronavirus. I think Taiwan hasn't had a case in like 200 days. And we have three times the resources as Taiwan. So, obviously, we don't want to do the necessary steps to, relieve ourselves from this virus, like simple things like wearing a mask, 6 feet, 6 feet apart. Those type of things. We still want to gather in large crowds. And we as the American society think that this is a threat to our freedoms, which, is the very confusing part.
Well, we've been made to think this. We've been persuaded and bombarded with these messages so that we've come around. We said, okay, we understand. We'll do it your way. And we gave up. But the bottom line is this. You have a brain in your head. You can't tell me that you're comfortable with looking at these numbers and thinking that all is well. It's just not happening to you just yet. But until it does, you could live with things as they are. And I'm still saying that we continue to ignore the unspoken racist message here that as long as the people doing the dying and the suffering are people of color, for the most part, that's the secret. They are all saying, oh, yes, we know it's a terrible disease, but, hopefully they'll find a cure, something stupid like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can all live with the increasing numbers, because somewhere they know, they have been told, they have been informed as to who is doing the bulk of the suffering and dying.
And we still have no national action plan.
No plan whatsoever. Nobody, not the Congressional Black Caucus, not the Hispanic Caucus, nobody has a well-thought-out plan. And nobody's pressing for the allocation of the kinds of money that it would take to make a credible effort to combat this disease.
But we're the best country in the world, right?
Absolutely. And the most democratic. Absolutely.
Exactly. That's my point. We're the best country in the world. So, hey. And I say that facetiously, so.
I know. But what we say is we have to make some noise, and we have some things to do, and we better get to it. We know the viciousness of this disease. It will take you out in no time at all. You're gone. We don't know what is happening. For example, we have Black medical schools. We have incredible resources in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has a very enviable scientific population. But how are they involved? Nobody is looking into these things.
And don't forget about Cuba. They also have a
absolute.
Well, but
you know, I understand that. I didn't mention Cuba because I know automatically people throw that idea out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so narrow-minded in their views in Washington. But this is, if there's any time that the world should actually see the situation for what it is, and where possible, work together to find some kind of answer. The answers that they're working hard at are the products or the vaccines or whatever it is they think will make the most money. It is not accidental when they announced that this new vaccine is being developed. On the very day they announced it, none other than the CEO of the company sold millions of dollars worth of shares.
Mm-hmm.
So we see what is happening. And still we're not getting the kind of reaction we ought to have. We need to be in the streets. We really do. We need to advocate for people who cannot advocate for themselves. They're not in a position to do that. They're very vulnerable right now. Literally their lives are at stake. Who is speaking for them?
That's true.
And this is the president who has not mentioned it. He's not seeing anybody because these are the people he's accustomed not to see. This is nothing new. Not to him. He doesn't see them when they're well. He certainly doesn't see them when they're sick. And never when they're dead. He hasn't changed.
No. And Herman Cain is like the perfect example. He's a guy who supported Trump. And has Trump ever mentioned his name since he passed away?
Did he mention his name when he passed away?
Exactly.
Okay. Not even since, but when? Right at the time when he passed away. His name wasn't mentioned. Not by Donald Trump.
Wow.
And I can bet you Herman Cain had great, what is the word I'm looking for? you know, great love for the Republican Party and helping it, and therefore for the president and so forth. He was a distant memory before he even breathes his last breath. We've got to mobilize on this. We have to mobilize on this. This is unacceptable, it's contemptible, and it speaks volumes that this is the level at which this country has reached in the eyes of the world. I remember the United States growing up as a child. It was the greatest thing since sliced bread. There was nothing that the U.S. couldn't do, couldn't solve, couldn't help. And this is where it's come to. And look at the numbers. They defy logic that a problem can reach such an urgent situation in such a short time, and still there is no response.
Yeah, it's
in proportion to the severity of the problem.
It's worse than it happened in spring. The numbers are going on those levels.
But we have to get off our duffs and say this is not going to stand. We are not going to let people die this way and become so sick. And now they're discovering that even when people get over the initial infections, they tend to develop mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some serious work to do, and we ought to get used to it and get down to it. We need to get down to doing some hard work here, and we need to be very vocal about this president and his non-humanitarian self. His whole administration ought to be condemned. This is not the way to treat people, your fellow citizens. We have to stand up for them. Thanks, Henry, for your call. Let's see. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Retrieve.
How are you doing?
We're here, my phone, you know how it goes. I just wanted to reiterate what you said, and I got to applaud you because I haven't heard that recently. Initially, the focus of how COVID was affecting people, the minority community, the people, black people in America, people with pre-existing conditions, hypertension, diabetes, other health issues. The large part of the population is African American, and that this is what this virus was affecting, and these are the people that are dying. And no one was, at first it came up and it was raised, and then it sort of like died down. Then we got bombarded with curves and waves and closures and things like that. But the bottom line is the people that are dying are the minority people in this country, or people such as myself. And even I'm not even talking about Trump. I'm talking about the Congressional Black Caucus. I'm talking about leaders that are already in the government that are not addressing this. It's just being brushed over and pushed to the side. And like you said, these numbers, when you really contemplate them, are mind-boggling. In the 20th century, where we have the medical, we have the facilities, and we have the means to curtail this virus and to address the underlying conditions that make it so fatal for a certain segment of the populace. But I think, according to American history, it's the segment of the populace that always gets screwed over when things are bad. And everybody's okay with that.
Well, we have to say we're not okay with this, and we have to stand up and represent those communities that are being bombarded with a disease. They don't have the means and the methods or anything to respond to in an effective way. We have to stand up for them. And let's think of what we can do and do it. Thanks, Ed, for your call. That brings us to the end of our program today. We certainly can continue this conversation. It is most urgent that we continue this conversation, but with an eye not just to talking about it, but to organizing against it. We have to stand up. This is intolerable, and it is wrong, just plain wrong. And we have to do something about it urgently. So let's talk a little bit more tomorrow. And I thank you so much for your input today. Bye-bye.